Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, hi there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of a little podcast we like to call Rico Bronya. So here's the reality, Met fans. We got a lot to talk about today, by the way. We'll read some of your emails. We'll focus a little bit on Carlos Mendoza, a guy that we haven't mentioned a lot during the offseason. But we lead it off with the reality that Roky Sasaki will not be a New York Met. Is anybody surprised? Like, is anybody out there really genuinely surprised that Roky Sasaki did not pick the New York Mets? When it was first announced that he was coming over here and we were all familiarizing ourselves with the system and the fact that this will be similar to Ohtani's first free agency and it's not, you know, highest bid gets him, did any of us really think? And this is not to crap on the organization by any stretch or crap on where we've come as a franchise. But did anybody really think that Jeremy Hefner and the work he's done, and he's done some really good work, that David Stearns, and he's done some nice work that he's been here for a year. Did anybody really think he was going to pick us? And I don't mean that in some kind of negative way about us. I just think that when you look at the competition, specifically the Dodgers and the Padres, because the Blue Jays are apparently a finalist too, we'll see. Did anybody think that geography, that we can't change? We can't change where New York is located. Did anybody think we were really going to get him? So I'm not angry. I'm not even disappointed. I think it was to be expected. And I think that this offseason, in terms of building this rotation, was around the idea that Roky Sasaki was always going to be a long shot. So when the news came out over the last 24 hours that he's not picking the Giants and he's not picking the Yankees and he's not picking the Rangers, it was only inevitable that he was then going to say he's not picking the New York Mets. And it is what it is. Can't get crazy about it. Can't get angry about it. As far as where I would like to see him go as a baseball fan, obviously the Toronto Blue Jays are the least offensive team, as they do not share a division with us, nor do they share a league with us. So yes, I think clearly the Toronto Blue Jays are the first choice. But can I surprise you about something? The second choice may confuse you. It is not the San Diego Padres. It's the LA Dodgers. Because here's my attitude about the LA Dodgers, and they may not be done yet this offseason, even if they add Roky Sasaki. They've been attached to Tanner Scott, a guy that we as Met fans, or at least a lot of us, are hoping they could grab their hands on to improve this bullpen. So the Dodgers may not be done in terms of adding to their roster. Here's the way I look at the Dodgers and why I would prefer Sasaki go there as opposed to San Diego. The Dodgers are already a behemoth. And no matter what we do, no matter what we do the rest of this offseason, the LA Dodgers are going to go into 2025, rightfully so, as the team to beat. And nothing is going to change that. Not a damn thing. So my attitude towards the LA Dodgers would be they're likely winning the division. They're likely winning over 100 games. They're likely a team that's going to automatically jump to the division series and not have to deal with that pedestrian wildcard series. And maybe we have to beat them. Maybe, maybe not. It's baseball. Maybe someone else does our dirty work. And the Dodgers get knocked out in the best of five to the Padres like they almost did a year ago. So as jacked up as they get, as talented as they are one team. They are one threat. And yeah, Mets face the Padres in a DS or a CS. We will be underdogs. Totally accept that. But as better as they already get, we're going to be underdogs no matter what. If the Padres go out and add Roky Sasaki, then a team that's on our level, you could argue we're better than. I guess you could argue they're better than us. That's a nice little baseball debate we'll have sometime in March. They get better, or at least they have a real chance of getting better. I know there's a lot of unknown attached to Roky Sasaki. So for that reason, if there are numerous National League teams, and in this case, it's only the Dodgers and the Padres bidding on Roky Sasaki, I would just rather him go to LA. Do you agree with that philosophy, Pete? Or am I seeing this wrong that I need to root against the LA Dodgers acquiring anybody?
I think it's a little annoying that the Dodgers keep on getting everybody. And I think this is like the worst kept secret. Like, do we really think that Roky Sasaki is going to pick the Toronto Blue Jays? No chance. Do I really think that maybe him and Yu Darvish are going to go have a nice, you know, meal and discuss about how it would be to live in San Diego together? No chance. He's going to go to LA. So you're right. Like, we shouldn't get pissed off anymore, because I kind of want the same idea for us, for the Mets, to eventually be able to get it, get everybody they want and more. I just don't think that's the game plan for the Mets. And at this point in time, I think I just hate the fact that there's like this hidden storyline. They're like, oh, maybe someone's going to, we know he's going to be a Dodger.
He's probably going to go to the Dodgers. And I get the whole, it's annoying that the Dodgers seem to get everybody, but here's the reality. That's who we want to be. Like, our dream someday, and certainly our dream when Steve Cohen bought this team, is that we become the Dodgers. We're the obnoxious team that's signing everybody. So, yeah, I mean, it's annoying that they get a lot of different players, but they are already a behemoth. They are already, and like I said, I'll say it again, they are the team to beat in the National League, and they're likely to be the team to beat in the National League for the foreseeable future. And no matter what we do, nothing's going to change that. But the beauty of baseball is, just because they're the team to beat in the National League doesn't mean they're winning the National League every year. As we saw prior to last year, they get picked off a lot in the division series, maybe not even by us, but by other teams. So them continuing to get stronger, to me, is better than the Padres getting stronger, or the Giants getting stronger, or just another National League threat getting stronger. Let the jacked up, steroided up Dodgers continue to get more players, whatever.
Yeah, I don't want a dynasty. I don't want them to be like, oh, look, we found another gem. Wow, amazing. This guy, Roky's,
you know, he's that good. You know what? I'm not worried about a dynasty, because the LA Dodgers, and also, here's the thing about dynasties. I think what we need to realize, as much as maybe we don't want to admit this on a Rico Bronya, is that what the Yankees did is unique and special. It's probably never happening again. Like, dynasties don't exist in Major League Baseball. That was a long freaking time ago that we saw a dynasty. I mean, the closest thing we've seen to it recently is Houston, and I don't think anyone's calling them a dynasty. So while the Dodgers are a regular season dynasty, and they will make the playoffs every year until we're all dead, that's likely, that doesn't mean they're going to the World Series every year. All you got to do is look at recent history. They haven't gone to the World Series every single year. They are prone to get picked off. And if it wasn't for the Padres, they would have gotten picked off last year in a best of five series. Just saying.
No, you listen, I get it. It's difficult, but the fact is, like, I don't want to see, and you know what? Maybe they're not a dynasty for winning the World Series, but they're gonna be there every year. And
they are.
Would they be there every year? I mean, there was a time where they actually were terrible. I know it's crazy. That was a while ago. But there's a time they were terrible. Right now, they're not gonna be terrible until the deferred payments start on Shohei.
Yeah, long time from now. They are the team to beat. Just repeat after me, Met fans. The LA Dodgers, and there's nothing wrong with this. The LA Dodgers will go into the start of the 2025 season with Sasaki, without Sasaki, with Tanner Scott, without Tanner Scott, as the team to beat in the National League. All we can worry about is ourselves. And one guy who is worried about ourselves is Ed Flood. Ed Flood writes, the rotation after not landing Sasaki. This rotation is very concerning and everyone is ignoring it. I'm not just saying this because we didn't land Sasaki. The top three are David Peterson, Sean Manaea, and Kodai Senga in no particular order. How can we say any three of those guys are sure things? Peterson and Manaea both had first good years of their careers this past year. And in Peterson's case, the underlying numbers were very concerning. Holmes is a reliever who just came off a bad year, by the way, and Montas, who hasn't been good since 2022. Senga was hurt all of last year, so we are just assuming Sean Manaea and David Peterson have ERAs under four, which if they don't, we're in trouble. Kodai Senga will just bounce back after missing a full year and be the ace again. Then we have Tylor Megill. Oh, yeah, he's been good over his career. Griffin Canning, who pitched innings, which I don't get, has such upside because they're in championship window, and he was the worst starter in the league last year. And then you have Blackburn, who's been hurt and never great his entire career. They have to sign another good arm. This elite lineup doesn't even factor in here because if they re-sign Alonso, you can't argue it's a top two or three lineup in the NL either if that's the only bat they add. I do believe in the Mets' development, but I do think they're a team competing for – you can't be a team – hold on, let me read this again. I believe in the Mets' development, I do, but they are a team competing for a championship. You do that when you sign Soto. And to not have one certain guy that they don't need to develop or they know won't have a really big year, development and tinkering pitchers won't work every year. All right, I get your point. So state of the rotation right now, knowing that Kodai Senga – is top of the rotation, Sean Manaea, David Peterson. You mentioned Montas and Holmes. We know about the depth guys. State of the rotation, also knowing Roki Sasaki's not walking through that door. State of the rotation, knowing they're not signing another starting pitcher free agent. State of the rotation is they may add one guy via trade, but I wouldn't bet my life on it. And I wouldn't bet a lot on it. The state of the rotation right now is that you're right. I don't feel great about it going into the start of the season. I'd be lying to you. The state of the rotation is there are more questions than answers. Now, I could sit here and tell you how every question is answered in a positive way, and the Met rotation at least replicates the numbers from last year, if not gets better. But I can also state a way where everything goes bad. David Peterson and those underlying numbers you mentioned comes back and haunts us. He pitches to a 5 ERA. Kodai Senga can't stay healthy. Sean Manaea's year last year was an anomaly. Clay Holmes is a reliever. I totally get it. What I would say is this. I kind of frame it with, can the Mets replicate what they got last year? So let's start with Sean Manaea. I feel decent. Decent would be the way I would describe it. That Manaea can repeat what he did a year ago. He had a very good year last year. He went out, made every start. He got better in the second half. The whole Chris Sale thing, changing the arm angle. But I do feel decent about Manaea in the prime of his career, who's always been durable. Like, that's been a positive of his over the last few years. I feel decent that we could at least get a replication or at least a close facsimile of what Manaea gave you a year ago. Now, maybe that's me being too optimistic. That's fine. I get it. He had a very good year last year. But I think the reason most of us were excited about Manaea re-signing is that most of us believe what we saw last year is something he can build on. And when you look at the rotation, the entirety of the rotation, including guys that are not back right now, like Severino in Oakland / Vegas / Sacramento, Quintana, who is still unsigned, and even the guys who are with us, I feel better about Mania replicating last year than anyone else. So let's start there. That's a positive. Number two, I have no idea what Kodai Senga is going to be this year, coming off a year in which he didn't pitch. So it is fair to say, hey, what is he off an injury? But here's what I can tell you, and I guess this is another positive. He's going to make more than one start. Now, I knock on wood when I say that, but Kodai Senga is very likely to give us a hell of a lot more than he did last year, where he made one bloody start. So that's positive number two. By the way, they're not all going to be positives. I'm starting off in a solid way. I don't think David Peterson is going to match his overall numbers when he pitches this season. But he also may be able to give us more innings and start more games, considering he didn't begin his season last year until the middle of late of June. Is David Peterson going to be as good as what he was down the stretch last year? I wouldn't bet on that. But what do we need him to be? If Sean Manaea is replicating his numbers last year, and Kodai Senga has clearly given us a hell of a lot more than he did last year when he made one bloody start, what do we need from David Peterson if he's going to go out and make 28 starts? Four ERA? Four and a half ERA? Like, what would we deem as, all right, that's decent. That's solid. I think David Peterson is the wild card in all of this, because everyone else we kind of have a track record on. Even Kodai Senga, though it's only 1 year of a track record, and certainly there's questions about his health. The thing with David Peterson is, hey, can he build off of what he did, not just in the second half of last year, but some of what we saw in the postseason? Some of the big performances coming out of the bullpen. Some of the big starts he made throughout September. I think Frankie Montas and Clay Holmes, I mean, you toss a coin up. Like, that's going to be the real test. The real test of what the Mets have done with this pitching lab. The other thing, and this is where the Mets do need to address more things this offseason, because, again, I think they're done with the rotation, whether we like it or not, is they got to add more arms in this bullpen. They have to add some more reliability in this bullpen.
Oh, it's such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And I think if you do that moving forward, maybe the identity of this team will be far different than last year, where the bullpen for a big bulk of the season was a problem. Like, their bullpen last year was not very good for a long stretch. Can that be a little bit different? So look, right now, state of the rotation, I can't tell you I feel great about it. I can't tell you it's going to be a disaster. I feel very iffy about it. And I've gone through it. Can Kodai Senga stay healthy? Can David Peterson build off of what he did in the second half of last year? And can they develop Clay Holmes into a suitable, respectable starting pitcher? I like the pitching depth, though. I thought some of those comments on the depth isn't fair. I mean, when you're talking about sixth, seventh, and eighth guys, you can't expect much better or more than Paul Blackburn and Tyler McGill and potentially Jose Budo and Griffin Canning. That's not the worst. We're talking about depth guys. Who the hell has good depth guys? Like, I think that area is maybe better than people realize.
Evan, we're talking about the depth, though. We're sitting here saying, well, you know, at least we have the great sixth, seventh, eighth guys in case the third, fourth, the fifth guy doesn't work out as well. But how about the first two? Like you said, Kodai Senga, he's pitched one game last year. I mean, that's not a lot.
Is he going to start more than one game this year?
I would hope so. Let's put it that way.
That's already producing more than we got last
year. All right, but hold on a second. Here is my biggest issue. You just spent $765 million on Juan Soto. You spent a ton of money. The actual value of this franchise, the 2025 roster, they're down like, what, $75 million still? I forgot the difference in payrolls. They took a lot of money off the books.
Yeah.
You tell me you can't go and spend a little bit on some pitching? And by the way, this is reminiscent of 2006, 2007, which is the pitching rotation wasn't all that great. And in 2007, it was basically the same minus Pedro Martinez, if I'm correct.
Okay, but right now, when we look at this rotation, there is nothing in free agency that's worth adding. Would you agree with that? You're going to give me Jack Flaherty? Like, what are you going to give me? I'm talking about free agency. Free agency, yeah. And free we can re-argue the Corbin Burns stuff all we want. He's not a Met. He's not walking through that door. So in free agency, would you not agree there's nothing left to add?
Besides Flaherty?
Well, I mean, you want Jack Flaherty? I don't.
I mean, he's better than half the rotation.
Well, you shouldn't sign those guys then. I think it's too late now to say, let's just go sign Jack Flaherty.
But we assumed that they were going to get more before Corbin Burns was signed.
I agree with you. I think the way to add to this rotation, if they are, and I wouldn't put the percentage that high, I'd say it's like 25%, is to make a trade. Is Luis Castillo, is Dylan Cease, is whatever other starting pitcher you think may become available, but it's not happening in free agency. Like
that's okay.
It's the starting pitching market. And what would not surprise me at this point is, look, the Mariners are asking for the moon for Luis Castillo. That's what I've heard. Like they want a lot for him, and the Mets aren't going to give a lot. I think they'd give something for him. I think his contract is more than reasonable. And you got to be careful with the Luis Castillo thing, because if the Mets traded for Luis Castillo tomorrow, we'd all be excited, right? At least most of us would be.
Yes.
You know what the negative of that is?
No.
Why are the Mariners trading Luis Castillo?
Because I don't think he's good.
No, they're free up money. To free up money to add a bat. Mets take in Luis Castillo. Money's been freed up. All of a sudden, they make an offer to Pete Alonso. We lost.
You know my thoughts and feelings on Pete Alonso anyway. So it's not like they're going to get him anyway. It's not like they want Pete Alonso. So let them go sign Pete Alonso.
Well, let the jury is out on how much the Mets want to keep Pete Alonso. But I think that the Mets are interested in Luis Castillo. I think the Mets are interested in Dylan Cease. I think the Mets are going to be interested in adding an arm. And I think if they don't add an arm before the start of this season, I think that even during the season, especially around the trade deadline, that could be the thing they buy, especially if their rotation doesn't pan out the way they're planning it. Keep that in mind, like the trade deadline, which the Mets were not super aggressive at this past year. I think this is a different year. I think they're at a different point in their development where if the Mets are in a race, obviously, I mean, if they're 10 games out, it's a different story. But if they're in a pennant race, which I think we all assume they'll be in, I think they will be bidding on some of the premier starting pitchers that are made available at the trade deadline. So I think the way to add to the rotation is now it's done via free agency. It's via trade.
I have to put a break here, and I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer, but you just said they're fighting for a pennant. The New York Mets are fighting for a pennant with this pitching rotation. They still need another bat. Like, Don't give me that they're fighting for a pennant until they actually do
something. Well, hold on. The offseason is not over, obviously. They need to bring back Pete Alonso. We mentioned they need to add bullpen arms. Obviously, the offseason isn't done. It's the middle of January. I'm merely saying I think they're done adding into the rotation right now. Are you telling me that if they don't add another arm, no matter what they do, bullpen, bat-wise, they can't be in a pennant race now?
I'm not very comfortable with this pitching rotation. I'm not going to lie.
Now, I'm not saying I'm comfortable with it. You're saying they can't even be in a freaking pennant race. There's a difference between the two things.
They weren't in a pennant race last year. I thought their pitching rotation actually performed very well. Do we expect the same out of these guys? I mean, like you said Kodai Senga's coming back, so that's going to change. But I want to play that game.
Let's play that game. So one of the things I said coming into last year on how I thought the Mets could compete was, hey, they had a pretty damn good offense in 2022. I went back a year earlier and said, boy, if they can just replicate what they did in 2022 and just get average pitching, then the Mets can compete. Now, I think their pitching was a lot better last year than maybe any of us expected. But just to give you some numbers, and let's see if the Mets could at least replicate what they did a year ago. They finished 7th in Major League Baseball in runs per game. 7th, okay? Just to give you perspective, a year earlier in 2023, they were 20th. Okay, so they went from 20th to 7th. And in 2022, the year they won over 100 games, they were 5th. They scored 4.77 runs per game in 22. Last year was 4.74. So they got back to scoring the amount of runs they did in 2022, which was the formula, all right? So they got their offense to be a top 8 offense in Major League Baseball. Let's start right there. Let's just start with the offense. I believe the Mets can and should have a better offensive team than they had last season. Now, you ask me why? Fine, I'll give you a whys. I think Francisco Lindor is being asked to replicate or at least be somewhat close to the numbers he put up last year. Maybe asking a lot. Guy had an MVP year. He also did dick in the first 2 months of the season. Okay? I think you're asking for Brandon Nimmo to have a better offensive year than he had last year. That's not asking much. You're asking for the production in center field to be the same, and it wasn't very good last year. Hopefully, it'll be a little bit better. The production in right field, I mean, is it even worth having a conversation?
That part we don't have to talk about now.
Okay, they got Juan Soto. I assume they're going to bring Pete Alonso back. If they don't, this is a game-changing conversation when it comes to the offense. My hope is Pete would put up better production than he did last year. I think it's going to be tough to replicate second base considering Iglesias hit 340. Your hope is Vientos builds off last year. Alvarez should be a lot better, and I hope their DH production can be better. I think when you look at what the Mets have, what they're bringing back, what they added in Soto, it is not crazy for me to say they should be a better offense than what they were last year. Would you at least, assuming Pete is back, agree with that statement?
If Pete's back, I will say they're definitely above where they were last year, but not by as much as you're making out.
I never even said how much it would be better. I just said, can they be better?
Yes, they can.
All right. Now, here's where it's going to be tough. Their starting pitching last year had the 12th best ERA in Major League Baseball at 3.91. They were 12th. I'm going to blow your mind with something. In 2023, right, a year earlier, when they sucked, and they sold off Max Scherzer, and they sold off Justin Verlander, they were 13th in starting pitching ERA. So just based on where they finished compared to the rest of the world,
yesterday they were
12th, the year before they were 13th.
In the NL or baseball entirely?
No, Major League Baseball, 30 teams. 30 teams. I don't do the league thing anymore only because it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't.
I used to be a big league ranking guy. Now it's like, it doesn't freaking matter. So they, believe it or not, and I know this is so weird to think about, they replicated their starting pitching numbers from 2023 to 2022. From 2023 to 2024. The reason it felt so much better last year is because we had no expectations. Because we were looking at this rotation at this time last year, saying, oh, God, they're going to suck. Some said this is the worst rotation in the history of the New York Mets. The real question, and this is really, really important, is the bullpen. Because I would tell you right now, do I feel good about the Mets replicating their starting pitching numbers from a year ago? No, I don't. We just went through it. I think Manaea can be the same. I think that Senga has to be better, only because he's actually going to pitch this year. But you're losing a lot with Quintana and Severino that you're hoping to even just replace with Frankie Montas and with Clay Holmes. Unless you want to tell me, well, David Peterson and Kodai Senga are really replacing them because they didn't pitch full seasons. Either way, I agree. It's asking a lot, and it would be a mild surprise for them to replicate their starting pitching numbers. Here's where they got to get a lot better. I need this bullpen to be a lot better. Last year, their bullpen had the 17th best ERA in Major League Baseball. You know where it was in 2023, the year they sucked? 22nd. Again, not that big of a difference. The big difference between 23 and 24 was scoring runs. It's exactly what we said a freaking year ago. And some magic. The Mets had a lot of magic last year. But they need this bullpen. And it's not just Edwin Diaz having a better year, though that's a big part of it. Their bullpen, which was such a problem last year, we forget how much we were begging for David Stearns to go out and do anything to improve this bullpen. Their bullpen was a problem last year. Can this bullpen make a jump from 17th in baseball? And I'm going to tell you right now, Pete, I think that's going to be the ultimate key. And a lot of that are with arms where we don't know what to expect. We have no idea if Reed Garrett's going to build off last year, if Hennessy Cabrera is going to make the team as a spring training invite and be a lockdown left-handed reliever. And obviously, yeah, it'd be nice to add some certain arms. But the formula is going to be, can they just manage the same starting pitching as a year ago, or at least make it close, and make improvements with how they produced last year out of the bullpen and with their offense? And if the answer is yes, they win more than 90 games.
I mean, I'm crossing my fingers on that one, but dude, that's a lot of ifs. There's a lot of ifs there. This is not a, they haven't done, like, you're making it sound like, oh, we're still in the middle of January. It's 3 weeks away from pitchers and catchers, basically.
No, I understand that, but where we are in the calendar doesn't change the fact that a lot of relievers still haven't been signed. Like, I agree. The starting pitching, the additions of starting pitching and free agency, it's not happening with this team.
And why don't you think that they could even bring back Jose Quintana? Is that off the table completely?
I think it's off the table just based on the sheer amount of arms that they have right now. Like, they've got, think about it this way, Pete. They've got five guys who are guaranteed rotation spots. Kodai Senga is guaranteed a rotation spot. David Peterson, Sean Manaea, Clay Holmes, and Frankie Montas. Those guys are all signed to be starting pitchers. They got five guys. The rest to fill out their rotation are all depth guys. Griffin Canning hasn't been guaranteed anything, but he's a depth guy. Tyler McGill is a depth guy. Paul Blackburn is a depth guy. So I just don't think the numbers indicate that they're going to go out and sign another legitimate starting pitcher. I think the trade market changes things. I think if they have an opportunity to get like a legitimate top of the rotation-ish kind of guy like Luis Castillo, then they'll go get him. And then all of a sudden, Frankie Montas becomes the sixth guy.
Well, but that's the whole thing. Didn't they talk about the six-man rotation? Like,
yeah.
Like right now, I wouldn't feel comfortable with having a six-man rotation if you're going to go to Griffin Canning or Tyler McGill. Well, like, that to me is not fantastic.
That's what it is, right? Well, who has a fantastic sixth guy?
I mean, we don't have a fantastic fifth guy, Frankie Montas. listen, we can go in circles with this. I get it. I am just very pessimistic right now, which I know with Steve Cohen, I feel much more comfortable. But David Stearns is showing he has a playbook and he's sticking to it.
Yeah, look, it's tough to be confident in the rotation. I'm not super confident. I'm just not assuming it's all going to blow up and suck. Like, lay it out there. You can see how it can be halfway decent. Kodai Senga returning from what he did in 2023 and replicating that, that's an ace. By the way, I have a homework assignment. I want everyone to think about this. Don't give me your first reaction. I want you to think about it. Opening day, Houston, Texas. The New York Mets, the Houston Astros, everybody's healthy. Opening day starting pitcher. Just think about it. In fact, Pete, write it down right now on a piece of paper. Okay, just write it down. Keep it in your office, put it away, and a couple of weeks from now here on the Rico, we'll go back to it. We'll have a nice conversation.
That's gonna be Griffin Canning. So
Griffin Canning. You never know with spring training and injuries, it could turn out to be. It could be Tyler McGill all over again, you know. Let me read this email from Noah about Todd Hundley. I know that sounds very random, but I had made a comparison on a previous Rico about Pete Alonso leaving the Mets and becoming Todd Hundley. Noah writes, Evan, I'm sure you're getting a ton of emails about this, but your comparison of Todd Hundley and Pete Alonso is way off. I know you're not comparing them as players, but rather about what their relative legacies might be if Pete Alonso departs in free agency. But even if he does, no. Todd Hundley was a bright spot in a dark period for the Mets and was not a part of a single playoff team. Alonso has now been to the playoffs twice and has hit one of the biggest home runs in franchise history. He set the rookie home run record, besting a crosstown rival, and also came up with the LFGM slogan that has been part of this team's identity for 5 years now. Stay or leave, he will be remembered more with more affection than Todd Hundley. Honestly, Daryl Strawberry would be a better comp, except for the fact that he has a ring and Pete doesn't. So my comparison, for those that didn't hear the Rico from, I guess it was a week ago, I can't remember, was if Pete leaves, there's a chance he just doesn't live that bright in Met history. Here's the key to all this, Noah. The key is what happens next. So if Pete Alonso left as a free agent and he signs with, it doesn't even matter, the Angels, the Rockies, whatever. And let's say the Mets sign Anthony Santander to a nice short 2-year deal to basically replace his bat. And the New York Mets win the World Series this year. They go out and they win a World Series. Then I think Pete Alonso gets what I like to call, I'll give you another example, not a Met example. It's a Red Sox example. He becomes Nomar'd. Nomar Garciaparra was the face of the Red Sox. They traded him in 04. They got Orlando Cabrera. Cabrera was a big part of the Red Sox winning the World Series. And honestly, I think Nomar Garcia sorely forgot that Red Sox history. It's like he's just a note. So I think a lot of this is what happens next. If Alonso goes to another team, that team doesn't win much. And let's say he bounces around baseball and never matches the great success he had as a player for the New York Mets, and the Mets go on to better success, then, yeah, I'm not saying we wouldn't remember the home run he hit against Milwaukee, but I think he becomes very blonde Met history. So a lot of it is what happens next. I think most of us, despite that conversation Pete and I just had about the rotation and if this team's going to be good in 2025, we have optimism about the future. And that's where, if things get bigger, yeah, I think Alonso would be forgotten about is probably too harsh, but would not live as bright in Met history as maybe we think. Now, let me spend a few minutes on Mendy, okay? So I wanted to do a deep dive on managers in our franchise's history because we have now had 25 managers in the history of this franchise. We've had, and I separated them into groups in terms of how they began their Met careers, and how it all ended. So there are 8 managers who began their Met careers with losing seasons, 8 of them, okay? There are 6 managers that began their Met careers with winning seasons. There are 6 managers that took over in the middle of a season and then continued on after that. And then there are 4 interim managers in Met history. We are not including Carlos Beltran. He doesn't fit any of those. So the 4 interim managers, real quick, we'll get them over with. Mike Kubich in 1991 managed 7 games. Frank Howard managed half a season in 1983. Ray McMillan managed half a season or a little less than half a season in 1975. And Salty Parker managed 11 games in 1967. Those are 4 managers that, let's be honest, they don't exactly live in Met history as managers. Then you've got the 6 guys that took over midseason and turned it into a full-time job. Of those 6 guys, only one of them has seen the postseason. Wes Westrum took over in 1965 and then managed in 1966. Joe Torre took over in 1977 as a player manager. And then managed into 1978. Buddy Harrelson took over for Davey Johnson in 1990. They actually did finish above 500 after he took over. They got a little sparked by Buddy, 71-49. But then after that, in 1991, he was so bad, he ended up getting fired. That's what eventually led to Mike Kubich. Dallas Green took over for the immortal Jeff Torberg in 1993 and eventually got replaced in 1996. And then Bobby Valentine, the one who was successful from this, replaced Dallas Green late in 1996 and obviously had a great tenure. And then you got Jerry Manuel, who also got off to a pretty good start. Because remember, when he replaced Willie Randolph, like, that did spark the Mets. They went 55-38, but then they collapsed. So we forget about that. Only one of those managers made the postseason after taking over midseason. Not made the playoffs that year, but just in general during their tenure as Met manager. Then you got the eight that began with losing seasons. Casey Stengel, Gil Hodges, George Bamberger, Jeff Torberg, Art Howe, Terry Collins, Mickey Callaway, and Luis Rojas. As you can hear, two of them went on and had postseason success. Gil Hodges, obviously, won the World Series in 1969, just a year later, and Terry Collins, it took him a bunch of years. His first year was 2011. Finally, in 2015, Mets go to the World Series. By the way, more on 2015 coming up. We have a special announcement on a future edition of Rico Bronya. And then you've got the guys that have began their Met tenures with winning seasons. And it's amazing. Like, those guys all had postseason success, or at least got there. In fact, only one manager in the history of the New York Mets had a winning season in his first year and never saw the playoffs. And that was Joe Frazier back in 1976. That's it. You've got Yogi Berra in 72. They won 83 games following year. Manages them to the World Series and screws it up with some boneheaded decisions like not pitching George Stone and going to Tom Seaver on short rest. Ask your dad about that. Davey Johnson, who in 1984 managed them to 90 wins, and then, of course, a few years later, they win the World Series. Willie Randolph, who in 2005 managed them to 83 wins. 1 year later, they're in the NLCS. Buck Showalter doesn't really have a happy ending, but 101 wins, most wins ever in a first year for a New York Met manager. And then you got our guy Mendy last year, 89 wins, playoffs in his first year. And not just the playoffs in his first full year, but a little bit of a run. Now, think back to any manager in the history of the New York Mets. The only other manager to take over and immediately make the playoffs in their first year is Buck Showalter. Mendy was the second. At least in Mendy's case, though, it was a nice deep run. So what does Met history tell us about the future of Carlos Mendoza? It doesn't tell us much. But here's what this tells me about Carlos Mendoza. Thinking back to his first year here as manager of the New York Mets and thinking back to the good, the bad, what do I think of him? What do I think is going to happen next? I think the most impressive thing that Mendy did in 2024 is he was able to change. He was able to identify, all right, we're not doing well. Let's try something. Because ultimately, the best move he made was moving Francisco Lindor to the leadoff spot. And I don't know if every manager does that. So when I think back at his first year and I think back to how did he get to the 89 wins? How was it successful? How do I compare it to Buck's first year or Davey's first year or, you know, Yogi's first years before my time? But how do I compare it? I think his ability to kind of weather the storm from that awful start and make wise decisions. Being flexible about the lineup, I thought, was one of the most important things he did. Coming down hard on Jorge Lopez with the glove throwing incident and then not apologizing when I think they wanted him to apologize, I think showed toughness. Keeping this room together as they were struggling early this season. As far as like individual moves, like bullpen moves, how he handled his pitchers, I thought he had a great combination of feel and, hey, I'm going to look at the numbers and I'm going to use some analytics. Like, analytics are not a bad word. Analytics needs to be used. It's information. It's all it is. It's how you use information. If you're a slave for information and you don't make any decision based on gut, that's a problem. Now, if you make every decision based on gut and never use information, that's a problem too. And I thought in his first year, obviously 89 wins and making the playoffs and getting to the LCS, that's the end all be all. But I thought he showed a really good feel for handling both, for knowing, okay, I have a good feeling about letting Jose Quintana start this ninth inning. I have a good feeling for I'm going to let this starter be pushed just a little bit more. And I thought we saw that over the course of the regular season. I also like how he was willing to not fall victim to something we saw years ago, which is Edwin Diaz is my closer. I have to use him in the ninth inning. He did a little bit of what Bug did in 2022 and 2023, which is I'm going to use my best reliever when I have to use him. Now, he was not perfect. I don't want this to be, you know, a diatribe of perfection. I think overall he had a really good year, and I would give him an A for what he did in 2024. But I also feel really good about him moving into the future. You know, Buck Showalter, even after his success, you look at his history, whether it was with the Yankees or Arizona or Texas or even Baltimore, there's a shelf life to that. I think with Mendy, there is no shelf life. He's got a really good feel for his players, which he showed. He's got a really good feel for the game. And I honestly feel, I can't believe I'm saying this. I guess this is the ultimate manager confidence. This is the most confidence I've had in a manager since Bobby Valentine. Because with everybody else, and we've had good managers at times over the years, Willie Randolph was decent for a few years. Certainly Terry Collins had his success. But in terms of long-term, not just the short-term of it, feel for the game, feel for a locker room, ability to make changes, willingness to make changes, I feel really good about where this team is with this manager. So we'll see if Carlos can build off what was a great first year. As far as all those other guys are concerned that had winning seasons, just for perspective, in 1973, Yogi Berra's second year, they got to the World Series. In Joe Frazier's second year, 1977, I'm pretty sure they finished under 500, but let me just confirm that because 1977 does not exactly jump off my my brain in terms of how the Mets did. But the 70s were not a kind time to the Mets, especially the late 70s. Yeah, they had a terrible year. They went 64-98. So they went from 86 and 76, and they dropped down a lot in the second year of Frazier. Davey Johnson went from 90 wins to even more in 1985. Willie Randolph jumped up from 05 to 06, 83 wins to well over 96, I think, or 97. They won in 2006. Buck Showalter had to dive down, lost his job, and then you've got Carlos Mendoza. So of the five, three of them built off of their successes from year one. Two of them went backwards. I would tell you right now, I feel pretty good about Carlos Mendoza, hopefully moving forward. Now, programming announcement. We are bringing back the Killer Series. A year ago, we decided during the offseason, let's bring on a Met killer. Let's have a conversation. Let's let out some aggression, and let's talk about what they did to kill us. Last year, we had Adam Wainwright. If you missed that, you can always go to the archives of Rico Bronya and take a listen to Adam Wainwright. But this year is 2025. So I warn you, for those that don't want to listen, I apologize. We are going to have a conversation with the man who, in my opinion, killed us more than anyone else in 2015, Eric Hosmer of the 2015 world champion Kansas City Royals. So coming up, we will be airing this on Thursday night. On a Thursday night edition of Rico Brown, you can watch it on YouTube, and then it will pop wherever you download your podcasts. A conversation in the Met Killer Series with Eric Hosmer. We hope you enjoy it, or we hope you don't hate it that much, because you may hate it.
We probably will. Thank you for doing that for us. I appreciate you. Just a note before we leave here. So I just saw an update from Andy Martino on Pete Alonso, and it seems like the sides are still very significantly apart. They're not close. So I just want to throw that out there just before we head off. But I thought we'd bring some positivity to this podcast.
Wait, so what's the positivity?
There is none. There is none. I mean, you just ended up with the killer's note with Eric Hosmer. Here's Pete Alonso, and the Mets still not getting close. I mean, it's
well, not, well, why are they not close?
Far apart is what he says.
Far apart on what?
I didn't say specific details.
Far apart on, all right, Mets, we'll take a short-term deal, but we want $52 million a year, and the Mets are like, 52? We'll give you 27?
Well, if it was 3 for $120, and that's $40 million a year, I mean, I understand it's not, it's overpricing for somebody that there's no market for. Nobody wants to pay $25 million for. But, like, at some point in time, we've got to make a deal, right? We've got to work it out, or you just let them go somewhere else.
January 14th, January 15th is not that deadline, though. That deadline, unfortunately, doesn't put pressure on you until you get closer to spring training, and we are still a month plus out from the start of spring training. By the way, speaking of spring training, to all our Met fans out there who travel to Port St. Lucie, who maybe live down in Florida, we are working for the first time ever, on a Rico spring training trip. So we will keep you posted on the details of that as Pete and I decide, let's go down to spring training. So we'll let you know on dates for those that want to hang out and join us on a very special Rico Bronya takes over spring training. So certainly a lot to look forward to. And also, if you haven't yet, because we will certainly be doing this coming up in the next few weeks, if you haven't checked out our Rico rewatch, we are rewatching opening day 1985, Mets against the Cardinals. Any feedback, you can always email us to ricob@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.